Let's discuss the S1, S2 lab report first. Now, for this lab report, we're not going to follow the standard format that we've been using. Purpose, data, calculations, conclusion, discussion. We want to make it a little bit more streamlined than that. And so let me show you the format that I'd like you to use. There'll be only two sections to this. And let me tell you right now, this is due at the time that lecture starts. So that would be 10:30 a.m. a week from this Friday, which I believe is December 2nd. So for your data table, here's what I'd like. You had 10 different substrates. Each of those substrates you reacted with two different solutions. Ethanolic silver nitrate for SN1, and then sodium iodide and acetone for the SN2s. You did these reactions, got 20 different results. And so what I want you to do is a side-by-side comparison of what was that result versus what should have been the result. So we've gone over enough of different types of substrates now in lecture, and we've covered the mechanism enough that you should be able to look at each of those different substrates and determine, would SN1 happen? Would SN2 happen? So that's what the second set of columns at the end here is, where I say SN1 theory, SN2 theory. That means, should the reactions happen? And those will be yeses or nos. For the first two columns, the question mark, what I'm trying to convey there is, did the SN1 reaction happen based on your observations? Did the SN2 reaction happen based, again, on your observations? Now, these observations are going to be tricky to interpret, and that's the whole point. I want to see how you're able to handle these results. Because in some cases, you would have very clearly gotten precipitates. And if you clearly got a precipitate, then you should say that the reaction had occurred. But many of you saw maybe subtle color changes, or you saw swirliness in solution, or you saw some cloudiness, but not exactly a precipitate. How are you supposed to interpret that? Well, think about the way that the reaction was conducted, the lab was conducted. We had these 10 different bottles that all of you were scrambling around to use. Even if just one person accidentally used the same pipette to put into one bottle and then the next, then that means that there's going to be some kind of contamination. If you had only that little itty bit of contamination then if there was a side reaction, maybe there wouldn't be enough there to cause a precipitate or much more than cloudiness in solution. So it could just be contamination that causes a false response. We can't tell what really did happen because we didn't do IR, NMR, or any other characterization technique, TLC even. So you won't necessarily be able to say why you got the results that you did. You just need to acknowledge whether or not there is some question. So for the first two columns, I would say that you should say whether yes, the reaction occurred, no, the reaction didn't occur, or maybe. And which, again, I know is not necessarily a satisfying response, but it's the best you can do with the observations and the experiment that we did. If it happened with heating, it almost certainly happened at If it happened at room temperature, you still got the same result upon heating, correct? Did anybody have a result where you had something that did happen at room temperature that went away when you heated it up? Then don't worry about distinguishing temperature. If you've got a response either at lower or higher temperature, and particularly if you've got a better response at higher temperature, just go ahead and quote it. If any of you did have maybe an exceptional case, you could always then make a footnote on your table to say that you had that unusual behavior. Now, this is half of what you should do, is just a simple table. But as practice for your own sakes, I want you to write for each one of the substrates no more than a one-sentence statement of why you feel it should have reacted by SN1 or should have reacted by SN2 or both or neither. There is at least one substrate in that list that shouldn't have reacted at all. I won't point it out because I don't want to give the answers away at this point. But that's what I want you to do, is consider each of the different substrates. For example, we'll work with one of them. Wasn't it 1-bromobutane one of your substrates? So 1-bromobutane, that's a primary substrate, isn't it? So it should have done the SN2 reaction, but should not have done the SN1 reaction. Because SN1 reactions can't happen with primary substrates. So if you wanted to write a sentence out related to that, you could say 1-bromobutane, SN2, parentheses, primary. No SN1, not possible in SN1, because it's primary. Some short statement like that. Do that for each of the 10 substrates. So you'll have your data section, and then discussion. For each substrate, give a one sentence. Now, it's not fair if your one sentence has no punctuation, but then it goes for 5 paragraphs in length. So don't try to cheat on the one sentence. I'm trying to make less work for you all. So for each substrate, give a one sentence justification for why SN1 and or SN2 should or should not occur. Questions for that lab report? Then the other lab report that I'm going to go ahead and discuss is the dehydration, which we'll make that due the following Monday. So for your section, that means it's due 7:30 a.m. on Monday the 5th. All that you're going to do for that report is exactly the same type of IR analysis that you did for report number 4. So report number 4 was the alkyl halide lab, not the SN1, SN2, but where you made an alkyl halide. And in that case, you included in your report the spectrum that you took by IR, which same way we did it before you can do for this one, where you have the option of just turning in the paper scan if you'd like to, or you could scan it and email it, or scan it and include it in the report itself. But you're going to include your product's IR, and then you're going to analyze that product IR to see if your product's formed. And part of your argument's going to be exactly the same as what you had for the previous report, because we again started with an alcohol that we converted into something that's not an alcohol. So we want to see that the OH peak would be present in your reactant, which the reactant spectrum is in your text, or you could also look at it online. You're hoping you're going to see that alcohol peak disappear. But many of you didn't see it disappear. And that could be for 2 reasons. One, maybe your mixture wasn't dry. But the other more likely reason in this case would be that you did have some of that unreacted alcohol present. Why? Because we didn't do the second distillation. Now, some of you had good luck with your distillations where it ended up being efficient enough where you did see a disappearance of that OH peak. But many of you still also had the OH peak, and again, probably because we did poor separation. However, even if you had alcohol present, you might have evidence that your alkene formed as well. So if I may borrow your lab text for a moment, I want to point out two different pages in your text. One is the experiment itself, which is, well, the part that I care about right now. It starts on page 359. You're starting on page 359, you have the IR scans of the various products that could have formed. Now, we made a mixture of these different products, but the individual alkenes are shown in these scans starting on that page, 359. Scans are also available online on that database. The reason you might want to go there instead is because, unfortunately, your text does not print any absorption numbers. It shows the scale at the bottom of the graph, but therefore you have to just guess at what the real value is. But you have these different possible alkenes that form. You have their scans, and then earlier in your textbook, on page 255. Well, you were already looking at it. So page 255, there's a listing of different kinds of alkenes. An alkene that only has one carbon attached to it. An alkene that has two carbons attached to it, but on the same side. Alkene that has two carbons but cis. Alkene that's two carbons but trans. Alkenes with three carbons on it. Those different stretches are shown in that table on page 255. So what you can do first is look at the different scans for the individual products. You might remember, or it might have been long enough, you're going to need to go back and refresh your memory. We had this mechanism where we showed all these different alcohols, or all these different alkenes that could form. And what we really want to do is see if some or all of them might have shown up in our product mixture. Well, if you look at the individual compounds, look at their IR scans, compare those to the starting material to see what peaks appear, and take those new peaks and compare them to this correspondence table on page 255. Then you can figure out by inspection which peak is within the right range of the spectrum that confirms whether you had a cis double bond, a trans double bond, a terminal double bond, whatever kind you might have had. Once you've done that, look at your product scan, because it may likely contain some or all of these characteristic peaks that you're looking for. So let me say that process one more time. Then first, look at the individual compounds. Compare their spectra to the starting material so you can see what things appear. From that set of peaks, compare them to the table in the book to figure out which one corresponds to, that means I have cis, that means I have trans, that means I only have one substituent. Use that information to then look at your own products, mixtures, spectra, and figure out from that which alkenes you've got present. Questions? So for today, that's going to be it. If you are done with NMR and IR, then we got an early break. If you have IR still to do, please go ahead. Those of you who are working on the NMR, please go ahead.